All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Welcome to American Vindicta. This new special series is the America's Most Unexplained series. UFOs, Part 3. The Roswell Report. Fact versus Fiction. In the New Mexico Desert. Produced by the Headquarters United States Air Force in 1995. Forward. This report represents a joint effort by Colonel Richard L. Weaver and First Lieutenant James McAndrew to address the request made by Representative Stephen H. Schiff of New Mexico for information regarding an alleged crash of an unidentified flying object that occurred in the state in 1947. This publication duplicates the information provided to the Secretary of the Air Force and to the General Accounting Office. It was written as a result of Colonel Weaver's and Lieutenant McAndrew's efforts to locate records that explain the events of July 1947, leading to what is properly known as the Roswell Incident. The only information presented here that was not in the report delivered to the Secretary of the Air Force and the GAO is the photograph section. It appears that Colonel Weaver's final attachment at the very end of this book. The importance of Attachment 32. Lieutenant McAndrew's synopsis derives from the description of Project Mogul. The top priority classified project of balloon-borne experiments, which provides the explanation for the Roswell incident. Interest abounds surrounding the UFO wave of 1947, which began in the spring and did not dissipate until fall. Interest in UFOs climaxed during the summer, when multiple sightings of such objects occurred. Wrote by Richard P. Halion, Air Force historian. Introduction. Throughout the latter half of the 20th century, the subject of unidentified flying objects has evoked strong opinions and emotions. For some, The belief in or study of UFOs has assumed the dimensions of a religious quest. Others remain non-believers, or at least skeptical, of the existence of alien beings and elusive vehicles which never quite seem to manifest themselves. Regardless of one's conviction, nowhere has the debate about UFOs been more spirited than over the events that unfolded near the small New Mexico city of Roswell in the summer of 1947. Popularly known as the Roswell Incident, this event has become the most celebrated UFO encounter of all time and has stimulated enthusiasts like none other. Numerous witnesses, including former military personnel and respectable members of local communities, have come forward with the tales of humanoid beings, and alien technologies, and government cover-ups that have caused even the most skeptical observer to pause and take notice. Inevitably, these stories coming from the desert have spawned countless articles, books, films, and even museums claiming to have proof that visitors came from outer space. In February 1994, the Air Force was informed that the General Accounting Office, an investigative agency of Congress, planned a formal audit to ascertain the facts regarding the reported crash of a UFO in 1947 at Roswell, New Mexico. This task was delegated to numerous agencies, but the focus was on the United States Air Force, the agency most often accused of hiding information and records on Roswell. The presidential science advisor had also expressed an interest in this investigation. Thereupon, the Secretary of the Air Force directed that a complete record search identify, locate, and examine any and all information available on this subject. From the outset, there was no predisposition to refute or overlook any information. Moreover, if any of the information discovered was under security classification, it was to be declassified. And if active or former Air Force officials had been sworn to a secrecy oath, they were to be freed from it. In short, the objective was to tell the Congress and the American people everything the Air Force knew about the Roswell claims. Subsequently, researchers conducted an extensive search of Air Force archives, record centers, and scientific facilities, seeking information that might help to explain peculiar tales of odd wreckage and alien bodies. The researchers reviewed a monumental number of documents concerning a variety of events, including aircraft crashes, errant missile tests, and nuclear mishaps. The researchers reported to the administrative assistant to the Secretary of the Air Force, the office responsible for both Air Force records and security policy oversight. Within the Secretary of the Air Force, the tasking fell to the Director of Security and Special Program Oversight and its specialized subunit, the Declassification and Review Team. This team, comprised entirely of reservists, was well versed in the Air Force's records system and its complex declassification procedures. Previously, declassification and review team members demonstrated their expertise and effectiveness by declassifying millions of pages of Southeast Asian War and prisoner of war missing in action records. As this study makes abundantly clear, the declassification and review team found no evidence of any extraterrestrial craft or alien flight crew. In fact, what they find had been declassified for more than 20 years, a shadowy, formerly top secret project called Codename Mogul. Project Mogul resulted from two important post-World War II priorities set by the commanding general of the armed forces, Henry H. Arnold. These were to continue the cooperative wartime relationships between civilian research institutions and the military to maintain America's technological superiority, especially with respect to guarding against a bolt from the blue, in other words, a devastating surprise attack. Mogul addressed both of these concerns. Developed partially under contract with leading scientific institutions such as New York University, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, Columbia University, and the University of California at Los Angeles, Mogul's objective was to develop a long-range system capable of detecting Soviet nuclear detonations and ballistic missiles. Army Air Forces. Their officials assembled an expert group of military and civilian scientists to carry out the project. The group include Dr. W. Maurice Ewing of Columbia University, a preeminent geophysicist and oceanographer, Dr. Athelson F. Sipolis, the director of research at NYU, who later advised five presidents on scientific and cultural matters, Dr. James Peoples, the Air Force's civilian project scientist and later editor of the Journal of Geophysical Research, Albert P. Crary, also a civilian Air Force scientist known for significant contributions to Antarctic research, and Charles B. Moore, project engineer at NYU and an atmospheric physicist who pioneered the use of giant plastic research balloons still widely used today. Colonel Marcellus Duffy, a respected Air Force pilot and scientific administrator, led the project. Captain Albert C. Trukowski, a young Massachusetts Institute of Technology graduate, followed Duffy in the leadership role. Determining whether the Soviets were testing nuclear devices was one of the highest national priorities. It demanded the utmost secrecy if the information gained was to be useful. When the Soviets exploded their first atomic device in August 1949, the experimental project Mogul was not in operation. However, the explosion was detected by a specially equipped Air Force B-29 aircraft. Accordingly, Mogul was conducted under stringent security, secluded laboratories, code words, maximum security clearances, and strictest enforcements of the need-to-know rules. Nevertheless, while the nature of the project remained shrouded in secrecy, some of its operations obviously could not. The deployment of giant trains of balloons, over 30 research balloons and experimental sensors strung together and stretching more than 600 feet, could neither be disguised nor hidden from the public. Moreover, Operational necessity required that these balloons be launched during daylight hours. It was therefore not surprising that these balloons were often mistaken for UFOs. In fact, Mogul recovery crews often listened to broadcasts of UFO reports to assist them in their tracking operations. Additionally, the balloons were unsteerable, leading to such amusing events as the one reported by the New York Times, in which a secret Mogul balloon floated blithely over the rooftops of Flatbush, causing general public excitement before it came to rest on top of a Brooklyn tavern. In another episode, Mogul balloon recovery technicians directed a B-17 bomber, which was tracking one of the tests, to buzz and scare off a curious oil rig crew that was about to capture a balloon train that had fallen near Roswell. The ruse worked. However, too much activity was going on for the project to remain completely hidden. A Mogul project officer later noted, "It was like having an elephant in your backyard and hoping no one would notice." These occurrences were typical, leading the recovery crews to describe themselves as balloon addicts due to the predicaments in which the wandering balloons sometimes placed them. But the information the balloons were attempting to obtain was vital. To attempt to limit unauthorized disclosure, the Air Force employed a security mechanism known as compartmentation. Compartmentation, controlled access to classified information by dispersing portions of the research among several facilities and institutions. Each participating entity received only enough information necessary to accomplish its assigned task. In the case of Mogul, only a small circle of Air Force officers received the intimate details that linked together these unrelated research projects. The use of compartmentation, along with strict enforcement of the need to know, enabled Mogul to remain a recent, secret, despite its obvious security difficulties, and to remain unevaluated for many years as the cause of the Roswell incident. The issue of compartmentation was significant because some UFO researchers assert that the persons who recovered the Mogul equipment, members of the 509th Bombardment Group stationed at Roswell Army Airfield, should have been able to recognize the debris collected at the crash site as that of a research balloon. Although members of the 509th possessed high-level clearances, they were not privy to the existence of Mogul. Their job was to deliver nuclear weapons, not to detect them. The unusual combination of experimental equipment did not encourage easy identification that undoubtedly left some members of the 509th with unanswered questions. Some UFO enthusiasts have manipulated these unanswered questions to support their flying saucer recovery scenario, while eagerly supplying unfounded explanations of extraterrestrial visitation and cosmic conspiracy. Additionally, many claims of a flying saucer crash at Roswell rest on the description of debris collected at the Foster Ranch site. UFO researchers, including those who are said to have known all about Mogul, apparently did not compare the descriptions of the suspect debris with that of the components of a Project Mogul balloon train. Mogul's reports and documents that contain descriptions, illustrations, and photographs have been publicly available for at least 20 years, Had the researchers completed even a cursory comparison, they would have found that the materials were suspiciously similar. Detailed examination would have shown them to be one and the same. In the final analysis, it appears these individuals have pursued the convenient red herring provided by Roswell Army Airfield, while the real explanation lay just over the Sacramento Mountains at the Mogul launch site in Alamo Gordo. This report explains the events that transpired in and near Roswell, New Mexico, in the summer of 1947. It is based on written documentation and first-hand accounts of participants, all of which are provided here in the entry. While these answers are not as titillating as tales of unearthly craft and creatures, it is a fascinating story nonetheless. Wrote by James McAndrew, First Lieutenant, United States Air Force Reservist, Declassification and Review Officer. This is a memorandum for the Secretary of the Air Force. Subject: Report of Air Force Research Regarding the Roswell Incident. Attached is a report prepared in support of a General Accounting Office audit that is seeking to identify information concerning the Roswell incident. The report documents the considerable effort expended by numerous Air Force offices and personnel in this matter. The Air Force efforts did not identify any indication that the Roswell incident was any type of extraterrestrial event, or that the Air Force has engaged in a 47-year conspiracy or cover-up of information relating to it. Therefore, it is assumed that pro-UFO groups will strongly object to the attached report and denounce it as either short-sighted or continuation of the cover-up conspiracy. Nevertheless, the attached report is a good faith effort and the first time any agency of the government has positively responded officially to the ever-escalating claims surrounding the Roswell matter. Signed, Richard L. Weaver, Colonel, United States Air Force. Report of Air Force Research Regarding the Roswell Incident. This is the executive summary. The Roswell incident refers to an event that supposedly happened in July 1947, wherein the Army Air Forces allegedly recovered remains of a crashed flying disc near Roswell, New Mexico. In February 1994, the General Accounting Office, acting on the request of a New Mexico congressman, initiated an audit to attempt to locate records of such an incident and to determine if the records regarding it were properly handled. Although the GAO effort was to look at a number of government agencies, the apparent focus was on the United States Air Force. Secretary of the Air Force was the central point of contact for the GAO in this matter, initiated a systematic search of current Air Force offices as well as numerous archives and record centers that might help explain this matter. Research revealed that the Roswell incident was not even considered a UFO event until the 1978-1980 timeframe. Prior to that, the incident was dismissed because the Air Force originally identified the debris recovered as being that of a weather balloon. Subsequently, various authors wrote a number of books claiming that not only was the debris from an alien spacecraft recovered, but also the bodies of the craft's alien occupants. These claims continue to evolve today, and the Air Force is now routinely accused of engaging in a cover-up of this supposed event. The research located no records at existing Air Force offices that indicated any cover-up by the United States Air Force or any identification of such a recovery. Consequently, efforts were intensified by Air Force researchers at numerous locations where records for the period in question were stored. The records reviewed did not reveal any increase in operations, security, or any other activity in July 1947 that indicated any such unusual event may have occurred. Records were located and thoroughly explored concerning a then top secret balloon project designed to attempt to monitor Soviet nuclear test known as Project Mogul. Additionally, several surviving project personnel were located and interviewed, as was the only surviving person who recovered debris from the original Roswell site in 1947, and the former officer who initially identified the wreckage as a balloon. Comparison of all information developed or obtained indicated that the material recovered near Roswell was consistent with a balloon device, and most likely from one of the Mogul balloons that had not been previously recovered. Air Force research efforts did not disclose any records of the recovery of any alien bodies or extraterrestrial materials. You've been listening to American Vindicta in our special program of America's Most Unexplained. We will be right back after this commercial break.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes, precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host of American Vindicta. My name is Doug Thornton. Thank you very much for listening to today's episode for 87. Now, once again, I said we were going to get back into Roswell. I found really cool papers, which is the little bit of a theatrical that you just heard. And as I was reading it, I figured, you know, it would sound cool if I made this sound like a official of the government was reading it or being forced to read it. So that's kind of what I did, put a little bit of music behind it. I hope you enjoyed it. I tend to do things like that from time to time, but I'll tell you this much. As much of entertainment that was, it was even more entertainment for me to sit here and read this garbage. Now, this comes from media.defense.gov. So it is an official paperwork from the U.S. government. And once again, as the Air Force describes, they said that they left no stone unturned and that they did their due diligence in the best faith possible to give us the real answers of what happened for Roswell. And I'll just tell you that it still feels like to me it's a cover-up. It still feels like to me that there are things missing. And I got something pulled up from castleforacademy.com. And it has some stuff wrote in here about some key witnesses that were there for the Roswell crash. Now, this is something that was wrote about Major Jesse Marcel. So let's go ahead and have a listen. When the police and the U.S. Army arrived to investigate the crash, Major Marcel was the lead investigator. He was not involved in the secret projects at Roswell Air Base and generally did not know what the wreckage was. He looked at the wreckage and told journalists that he had decided that it could be alien. And shortly after, he changed his story and said that it was a weather balloon. Well, 30 years after the Roswell incident happened, Major Jesse Marcel became one of the most important people supporting the, quote, alien UFO theory. In 1980, he changed his story again and publicly said that his first idea of it being a UFO was actually the truth. He said that the materials he saw when he investigated were nothing made on this earth. He also claimed that a famous photo of him posing with some of the wreckage was also faked. He claimed that he was given some tin foil and wood and told to make it look like that part that was part of the wreckage, but that it was actually from the crash. Critics have pointed out that Major Marcel is an unreliable witness who has changed his story multiple times. He also apparently has a history of lying. He has previously claimed to have received multiple medals of shooting down enemy planes, when in fact, he has never been in combat and has never been awarded a medal. Next witness, Lieutenant Walter Haught. Lieutenant Walter Haught was the press officer for the team of investigators that first investigated the crash. As press officer, it was his job to deal with the newspapers and the TV journalists that were interested in what was happening. The day after the crash site was investigated by the Army, Lieutenant Haught made a press statement that said a flying disc had crashed and been recovered by the Army, but said that he had not seen it himself. The following day, he changed the story to match the official Army statement that it was also a weather balloon. However, after he died in 2005, a document appeared that was supposedly written by him before his death. In the document, he claimed that he actually was there with the crash site where there were two crash sites, and that one of them, real alien bodies, had been found. Now, the document said that he saw an egg-shaped alien craft about 15 feet long, and that there were several small bodies about 4 feet tall with large heads. He was convinced the bodies were alien, and he had come from a crashed spacecraft. Now, the critics have said that it is impossible to prove that he wrote this document, and that even if he did, by the time he died, his mental state was in very poor condition. He was unable to remember basic details about his past, such as where he went to school, so he would not be able to remember Roswell with such detail. Next key witness, General William Blanchard. General William Blanchard was the officer in charge of the Roswell Air Base. He knew everything about what was going on inside the base and knew all the details of the top secret spy balloon research called Project Mogul. When the crash site was first reported, General Blanchard did not think it was important and sent Major Marcel to investigate it. When he realized that it was part of the secret spy balloon project, he tried to cover it up. He organized the cover-up that said the crash was actually a weather balloon. On July 8, 1947, he called a press conference where the Army showed the media some materials that had supposedly come from the crash site. These materials were what would be usually found in a weather balloon. His cover-up was very successful, and he later said the story died the next day. For the next 30 years, there wasn't any interest in the Roswell incident. when Army records about the incident were finally declassified in 1994, General Blanchard finally admitted that the true crash was actually a top-secret spy balloon. Some people have refused to believe General Blanchard in the official Army statement because they believe that the Army is still trying to cover up what was actually a UFO. Now, we also have another key witness, Ray Santilli. Ray Santilli is a British musician and a film producer. He was born in 1958, 9 years after the events of the Roswell incident. Now, his connection to the story comes from a video that he released in 1995. He released a video that supposedly contained secret footage of an alien autopsy that had been filmed in Roswell Air Base. The film showed 17 minutes of black and white footage of an alien body being operated on by U.S. Army medical surgeons. It was grainy, and it was hard to see exactly what was going on during the footage, but when the film was broadcast on American television, man, it was a huge success. One broadcast received an audience of 11 million live viewers. It was claimed that the video was stolen from the U.S. Army records and leaked out to the public. Experts were skeptical of the film, of course. However, they began to point out that it did not seem real. Now, Ray Santilli continued to claim that it was real until 2006, when he finally admitted that the whole thing was faked. It was filmed using actors in London in 1995. He continued to insist that there was a real video, but it was so badly damaged that he had been forced to remake it. He claims to this day that this film was a reconstruction of the real footage of an alien autopsy. Next key witness, Bill Brazil. Bill Brazil was the son of Mac Brazil, the ranch owner who first discovered the crash site. He was with his father on the 5th of July 1947 when they investigated the wreckage for the first time. Now, on July 7th, 1947, after reporting the crash site to the police, his father, Mac Brazil, described the wreckage to the local newspaper as a large area of bright wreckage made up of rubber strips, tin foil, a rather tough paper, and sticks. He claimed that considerable scotch tape and some tape with flowers printed upon it had been used in the construction. Mac Brazil was not heard from again until the 1980s, when the Roswell Incident book was published. In it, there was an account from Bill Brazil. He claimed that his father had not been truthful about the materials that they had discovered. He said that the materials his father actually found were super strength and not of this world. In the 1991 book, UFO Crash at Roswell, it got even stranger. Bill Brazil now claimed that he and his father actually led the Army to a second crash site, and that in this second crash site, there were alien bodies. He said that his father had been forced to change his stories, and his father had been locked up against his will in the Roswell Air Base for a week to ensure that they followed the official story. Critics have said that Bill's version of what happened has changed multiple times and that he has made a lot of money from giving interviews and writing accounts of the incident. Next key witness, Glenn Dennis. Glenn Dennis was a mortician and embalmer working for Roswell Funeral Home. He dealt with dead bodies and burials. He also had a special contract with the Roswell Air Base to provide ambulance and funeral services to them. Although Dennis was alive and would have possibly been working in and around Roswell Air Base. He made no comment to the media around the time of the incident in 1947. The first time anybody knew about him was in 1989, when he got in contact with some UFO researchers and said he had top secret information about what really happened. He claimed that he had been part of the investigation into the aliens, and that he had taken part in 3 autopsies of alien bodies in the secret Roswell Air Base. He said he had a nurse friend who had helped him perform the autopsies, but she had died shortly after. He said she was called Naomi Mary Self, but nobody has been able to find any record of someone that name of that name serving at the Roswell Air Base. Now, he later changed his story and said he was keeping her name secret to protect her. Critics have accused Dennis of making up his account of what happened. None of his stories seem to match any evidence, and regularly changes his account of what happened. Dennis later founded and owns the UFO Museum and Research Center at Roswell, a museum dedicated to this incident. People have pointed out that as the owner of the museum, he would make more money if the, quote, alien UFO theory was still very popular. All right, the next article we have to read comes from SBS.com out of Australia. And this is wrote by James Jennings in 2021. And it's called, "The Daughter of a U.S. Army Officer Reveals Exactly What Her Father Saw Firsthand at the World's Most Infamous Alleged UFO Crash Site." Early on July 8, 1947, a press release issued by the 509th Bomb Group based in Roswell, New Mexico, revealed to the world's media that something incredible had happened. A UFO had crashed in the area, and the United States Army Air Forces was now in possession of a flying disc. The news was issued by First Lieutenant Walter Haught, the public information officer at the base, at the behest of the base commander and close personal friend, Colonel William Blanchard. By day's end, the information was retracted and a new press release issued claiming that was a mistake that had been made and the UFO was in fact a crashed weather balloon. People began to talk about Roswell in the late 1970s after several decades of keeping quiet. And this is coming from his daughter. I would ask Dad to tell me the whole story, and he told me the same thing he told everybody. I put that out, that the press release and nothing else. And that's Julie Schuster, which was Lieutenant Walter Haught's daughter. Although he was sworn to secrecy by Colonel Blanchard in regards to what he knew about the Roswell incident, Haught devised a way in 2002 to keep both his word and reveal what he knew by preparing a signed affidavit to be opened after his death. Quote, "Don Schmidt, one of the world's leading UFO researchers, who Dad considered a friend, and we were trying to save the information Dad knew for the future because we were unfortunately losing a lot of the first-hand witnesses," says his daughter Schuster. One of those lost first-hand witnesses was Major Jesse Marcel, the head intelligence officer at the Roswell Army Airfield in 1947 and the first person to arrive at the crash site. Marcel may have left behind a cryptic journal, the subject of the new series, Roswell, The First Witness, which premieres on July 27th on SBS Viceland. But Haught, Lieutenant Haught, was adamant he wanted to leave behind information that was crystal clear. Here's a quote. "Don and I talked to my dad, and we said, do you want to do a written statement for release after your death? And he agreed to it. We were very careful. My dad was very particular, so he and I went over it word by word, sentence by sentence, just to make sure there was no question about what was written. After Lieutenant Hawk's death in 2005, the affidavit was published in 2007's Witness to Roswell, Unmasking the Government's Biggest Cover-Up, a book co-authored by Schmidt and Thomas Carey. Quote, Don and I became friends with Walter, and by observing his facial expressions and the way he talked, you'd think there is a man keeping a big secret, says Carey. Finally, it all came out in his sealed statement after he died. What Hawt's affidavit revealed was that not only was his initial press release about a recovered flying disc accurate, but that there were two crash sites at Roswell, and he himself had witnessed firsthand what had fallen from the sky that fateful night in 1947. Quote, basically, Dad said, yes, he did see the bodies. Yes, he did see the craft, and much more than that, says his daughter, Schuster. At one point, I asked him about the size, and he said the craft was about 25 feet in diameter. To me, hearing what Dad said was not a surprise because he was very close to Colonel Blanchard. They remained friends for all those years, and I would have been surprised if he had not seen it. Walter confirmed to Don and I that the reason he kept everything a secret is because he promised Colonel Blanchard that he would not divulge the secret while he lived. And he didn't. He divulged it when he was gone. That's the reason he kept quiet. It was like a father-son relationship, and he'd promised Blanchard he would not talk. After years of carrying a huge reality-changing secret relating to possibly the biggest and most important cover-up in human history, Hawt had finally revealed everything he knew to his daughter, Schmidt, and Carey. Quote, the ship which he described was about the size of a Volkswagen Beetle, more of an egg-shaped object, and he did see a number of bodies, says Carey. He described them as being the size of children, and when asked point-blank if what he believed it was that he had seen, without hesitation, he'd say it was not from this earth, it was something manufactured off earth. Carey and Schmidt found dozens of other witnesses for their book, each one of them verifying Hawt's claims. Here's another quote. Those describing the bodies would become very emotional, says Schmidt. One of the officers involved, he broke down and just said, I can't get the faces out of my mind. His wife even told us how they'd been unable to sleep in the same room for almost 30 years because he'd jolt up in the middle of the night and scream and yell out because he kept having flashbacks because he saw the faces, he saw the bodies. We had another officer who also very traumatized by it, and it reminded him of being a young boy and seeing his uncle in a coffin, of how ashen gray he looked, and it caused him a lot of post-experience trauma. As one witness put it to us, it's the first thing I think of when I get up in the morning, and it's the last thing I think of when I go to bed at night. You're talking about guys who had just seen the worst horrors of World War II, yet this is the one thing that surpassed the trauma of all of that. A Roswell native, Schuster, knew several townspeople who had witnessed the crash but threatened into keeping quiet. There was a lady, and her husband and her sister were both involved in the incident, and she wouldn't tell me anything, says Schuster. Finally, she said to me, I'm going to say this once, don't ever ask me or my sister about this again, ever, because we promised my husband on his deathbed that we would never reveal what he told us. To me, that is such a telling statement. All that over a, quote, weather balloon. You're promising your husband on his deathbed that you won't reveal it was a weather balloon? That says me. To me, that says tons. Now, there are plenty of other articles out there that you can find about this. And the problem with Roswell is that a lot of the people that were involved are no longer here. So we have to go back categorically in the past, review evidence that the military left behind, law enforcement left behind, and there's really not much besides what I've already been disclosing to you. Honestly, I would say that what happened, there are several different things here that could have actually happened. Could there have actually been a weather balloon? Nah, maybe. Weather balloons were around at that time. Could it have been mistaken identity of Project Mogul? Maybe. We don't know because we don't have the evidence. However, would there be a need? Would there have been a need for all the secrecy, for the trauma that has happened to people who try to uncover this for years? Would there be a need for the government to go as far as they have for disclosure of their point of view from what happened? You would think that if it was something as great as a, let's just say, an extraterrestrial vehicle that crashed, you would think that something that great, something that, I guess you could say, life-changing to our country, you would think that would be talked about by now by our government officials. I mean, they've disclosed plenty to us. However, they have also hidden a lot. You have to understand, these people who are saying that none of this was real, it was just a really crazy balloon that was used to monitor atomic energy released by a nuclear explosion, are the same people involved in the Bilderberger Group, the Bohemian Grove. These are the same people who talk Americans into going to war. These are the same people who helped write up Operation Northwoods, Operation Mongoose. The excuses go on and on for me as to why I don't believe what the military is giving me. And honestly, I think information like this will be held until it can be used and weaponized. We hear talks all the time of a great deception that's coming based off of alien technology or based off of alien disclosure. We'll have to see. I think eventually we'll all find out the truth, or the other sad fact of the matter is we'll just sit here and continue to spin our tires and get caught up with the little details. Sure enough, I will tell you this much. As we continuously progress in this series, you'll find out that the Roswell incident really was just the beginning of disclosure. There are a lot of things out there that we're going to cover that you're going to start to find, I don't want to say overwhelming evidence, but let's just say you'll be able to build your own opinions based off the evidence that I bring to you, that there's a lot more to this whole UFO conspiracy than what we're being led on by the government. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Thank you to all the sponsors. Thank you to everyone who has donated to this program. And if you do have any crazy UFO stories or cryptid creature stories out there, send them to me. I'd love to read them. For right now, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I got. My name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. I'm out. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.